Hi and welcome to this week's Realty Talk Show. Hey, did you know that there are more than 13 million spare unused bedrooms in Australia right now? Well, this week we ask if that can help ease the housing crisis. Also this week, Bushy firms up on the notion that property is a game of finance, and then he introduces a concept that makes owning a home a lot more affordable with a zero deposit home loan. But in a really compelling piece from Bushy, he raises some big questions about insurance and if you're still covered. We'll round out the show this week with that comment from Bushy, so make sure you stay with us right till the end. Now, if this is your first time with us, welcome. You're going to find us on all podcast players and through the Southern Cross Oz Stereo Network. If you like the show, make sure you hit the subscribe button and help us to continue to bring you the best guests every week. Make sure too that you join the conversation anytime on Facebook at the Property Hub Collective. We'll be back in just a moment as Bushy kicks off this week's show.
Property deductions can save you thousands of dollars each year. To make sure you maximise deductions, you need to work with the most experienced quantity surveyor in the country. BMT Tax Depreciation is the leading specialist in the industry. They've completed over 700,000 tax deduction schedules for residential investment and commercial properties Australia-wide. BMT guarantee to find double your fee in the first full financial year deductions. Call BMT on 1300 728 726 today for an obligation-free quote.
Realty Talk and your host, Bushy Martin.
Do you have a spare bedroom? You know, the one that becomes the dumping ground for all of that stuff that you're still going to use one day, but never quite get around to it. Or the room that looks nice and you clean it every week, but it hasn't been used for just about as long as you can remember. I want you to park that thought. Now turn to our ever-growing and ever-escalating housing and rental crisis that we're hearing about every day in the news. The migrant population explosion, our continuing construction industry crisis, massive drop in properties for sale and rent, rising interest rates and rents, investors selling properties as they continue to be scapegoated by governments, and then there's the rising inflation and living cost increases, which have all combined to create pretty much a perfect storm for housing accessibility, leaving many out in the cold or struggling to survive. So what's the answer? Well, it's definitely not slamming the door and closing the borders. While governments are finally coming to the table, kicking and screaming because pointing the finger at just about everyone else has actually made things worse rather than better, it's going to be years and far too late before new housing supply actually comes online. So what's the actual solution? Well, remember that spare room that we spoke about at the start? Well, there are just over 13 million of these right across the country, right here, right now, that are collecting dust like yours. So why not do yourself and someone in need a favour and make it available for someone to rent? And you can also earn some rental income as well. It's a really obvious solution that's sitting right under our noses, so we just keep failing to see it. But other countries have actually incentivized mum and dads like you and I to better utilize our unused spaces through rental room schemes. And to reveal an example to see how they can help us and our great country now, we're joined by show favorite Lubwena Dortovic, the founder of industry disruptor, The Room Exchange. So welcome back to the show, Lubwena.
Thanks, Bushy. That was such a great intro.
Always love catching up with you. You've got great energy, and I love what you're doing to really disrupt the space. And as I've already said, it's such an obvious solution sitting right there in front of us. I just can't get my head around why people aren't embracing this opportunity, and the solution and the problems could be solved very quickly. But I know that you've been doing some homework and research, and there are other areas around the globe that are doing what you're suggesting successfully. So to set the scene, tell us a bit more about the rental room scheme. Where is it? How does it work? And how successful has it been?
Yeah, well, look, I think it's a brilliant idea, and it comes from the UK. It's called Rent a Room Scheme. And I'm really hoping that we can bring something like that to light in Australia, because it's just such a great way to support homeowners who do actually want to rent out their room. So we do have, you know, thousands of people across the country who are listing their homes on our platform now, and that's great, and they're doing that. But I think we could get many more of those 13 million unused spare bedrooms if we actually provided some form of an incentive other than, you know, being able to make some rent or maybe get some help around the house. So the rent a room scheme in the UK is based on, well, if you rent out a room, it's actually helping the country and the government with their housing crisis. And so they're offering a tax break to you for doing so. And like, duh. Like, seriously, think about that. It makes such obvious sense. So the government at the moment in Australia is scrambling around trying to figure out solutions. Meanwhile, there's lots of innovative concepts that are right under their nose. But let's put that aside for the minute.
Yep.
What if mum and dads who have, or anybody really, individuals, families who do have a spare room could rent that out and have a portion of that tax-free? So in the UK, you can earn up to £7,500 a year tax-free by renting a room in your home.
That's about 15 grand in Aussie dollars in reality.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not a mathematician, but from what I understand, I think the average mortgage is about 500,000-ish, and with all the additional interest rate hikes, I know for us it's actually an extra $14,000 a year. So when you think that that room could be rented out at roughly $1,000 a month, then you've pretty much got most of those 13 interest rate hikes covered. So it's an instant solution. The government can say, look, we're willing to turn a blind eye to a certain amount of income that you can earn tax-free. You're helping us solve a problem. You're solving a problem for yourself. We're not having to build anything. We don't have to wait years to solve the problem. Bam, this is just the perfect solution.
Love it. So if we sort of translated that UK experience here into Australia, how would you see it actually working locally?
Well, again, as I said, the government's trying to find solutions to housing. So if we just do the maths for a minute, Bushy, and again, you know, I'm not great at it, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. But if we just got 10% of those 13.5 million, so let's just say it's 1.3 million bedrooms roughly, right? Just 10%, because not everyone's going to be in a position where they can rent. They might have a spare room, but maybe their place isn't big enough to have an additional person. There's a number of reasons why. So let's just aim for 10%. So that's 1.3 million people who are being removed from the rental market. Now, when you think about the fact that we don't have the current rental supply that we need and we cannot build them fast enough, that's solving an instant problem right there, because those spare rooms don't have to be built. We're also helping 1.3 million homeowners hang on to their homes because of the additional interest rate hikes. And then we've got 1.3 million people that are creating a win-win solution for each other by utilizing space and utilizing their resources. So I just think that, you know, if we can do whatever it is that we can, house sharing is not the only solution that's going to solve this, but it's a pretty damn good one. And if we can do whatever it is that we can to support both homeowners and renters to create this arrangement in a way that is really beneficial for both, I think, you know, the government just really needs to have a look at this. And that's just something I'm really working to advocate for, because, Bushy, if us as individuals don't do what it is that we can to put a dent in this housing crisis, I'm afraid that we will not recognise our country in 12 months from now.
Well, there's a great quote that I often use, Lubwena, and that is the only thing that needs to happen for, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but the only thing that needs to happen for bad to prevail is for good people to do nothing. And we've got a glaring opportunity here. And the other thing that needs mentioning as well, I think, is that from a cost-benefit perspective, from government expenditure purposes, providing tax incentives to existing Australians rather than spending hundreds of millions of dollars on building new stock that are going to take years to actually eventuate, by the way, and we've got a growing and escalating housing accessibility issue, both from a ownership and a rental perspective moving forward, it's a no-brainer. It seems so simple to me. And I think this is part of the problem, that when things are so simple, people ignore them because they're looking for the complex solution because they've got to justify doing something when it's staring us right in the face. So tell me, I'd love your thoughts on what sort of demographics will benefit from this approach, Lubwena.
Look, I'd say that I don't think it's as much of a demographic, Bushy, as it is a need. So I think the need would be, you know, who are the homeowners? because they're the ones that would be affected by it. Who are the homeowners that have a mortgage, who are struggling with the additional costs of interest rate hikes? But it's not even just that, Bushy. It's also the, you know, the inflation, the cost of living at the moment. Everything just seems to be getting so much more expensive. So it's looking at who needs it the most. And so, you know, but look, having said that too, there's also pensioners and retirees who, you know, could also be impacted, you know, through tax. So I just think this shouldn't be seen as income in that way. I think it needs to be seen as a way to support households. It's going to reduce, you know, costs further down the road. I mean, what happens when homeowners are losing their homes, Bushy? You know, most middle class, as they're called, middle class houses, are only two paychecks away from losing their place. And what happens then? We don't have rental supply for them. I mean, I'm hearing stories of people on six-figure salaries who are sleeping in their car because they can't, not because they can't afford to, but they can't find somewhere. I'm hearing more and more of 50 to 100 people applying for the one rental property. I mean, it must be driving property managers insane at the moment, you know, with the amount of people they're having to turn away all the time. Like there is a solution. And I've been saying a lot lately, and this is one thing that I really want to bring into light. I want to get the attention of the real estate industry, because house sharing needs to become real estate's third option. That's a thought that I had a couple of years ago. So we've got home ownership, renting, house sharing. It is a viable option for people, not just for the people looking for somewhere to rent, but also for the people with the space. Because, Bushy, I don't know why, but we've managed to build a bunch of McMansions in this country. And a lot of them have got additional bathrooms, or, you know, you just got so many rooms that it's ridiculous. And a lot of the times it's not viable for people to downsize. It's not viable for elderly people to move out of their communities. But those two demographics there have got the most unused spare bedrooms out of any demographic in the country. But, you know, look, I know that my husband and I, both our kids have left home, so we house share instead of moving because we love the area. We've got all of our memories in the home. We've got the neighbours that we know, we have the services nearby that we use. And to be quite honest, Bushy, moving into, I don't know, a smaller place closer to the city, you know, like it's not really a viable option, let alone wondering if something's going to be there. So there's a lot of reasons why people are not shifting from where they live. So instead of it becoming or exacerbating the problem, let's see how we can utilise existing stock that's laying dormant in homes right now that can benefit the homeowners. It's not just the rent. We also have our rent offset option, remember? So you can ask for help around the house. Yes. The companionship, the support. And here's another one. We're near Christmas. House sitters. I wonder how many people are thinking about getting a house sitter. Don't get a house sitter. Get a housemaid. You know, there's lots of viable reasons why this can work. So,
yeah, you know. Really well said, because I think it's not just a housing issue, it's a community wellness issue in reality, because what you're suggesting, and let's face it, the baby boomers that are coming through and those that are retired, there's a lot of Australians who on paper look wealthy, so they're asset rich in terms of the home they live in, but they're cash poor. And a lot of those people are also very lonely. Now, they're rattling around in big houses. They're struggling financially and living on toast and 2 minute noodles. Why not bring some life and vitality into your home? Have some help, as you say, because there are ways of offsetting the exercise, providing a benefit for those who are struggling to find accommodation elsewhere. And collectively, it's a win-win all around. I think it's an absolute no-brainer in that perspective. Let's jump into the future and let's say we embrace this. What would be the impact on our housing crisis, do you think, if the Australian government actually got behind this to offer a similar scheme here?
Look, I think it's what it will do. It will stop further problems from arising, because I really don't understand how the government thinks that by building, like all the funding that they've got, putting forward for building all these homes in the next 5 years, which is, by the way, it's really interesting that it's 5 years and not shorter than the term of our current prime minister, because we don't want anyone to be accountable for it not working out, do we?
Just don't start me on that one, Lebwena.
Don't start me on that one. But, you know, like, is this going to work? I don't think so. We don't have the laborers in the country. The cost of materials are ridiculous. Really, how is that going to happen? I mean, the actual building industry itself needs disruption because the amount of time it takes to build and the way that they're building needs to change for anything to speed up anyway. So when you look at the fact that that is really not going to help immediately, let alone in the next 1, 2, 3 years, we need something right now. Now, you know, at the risk of plugging the room exchange, this is being deployed right now. We're about to hit year 7. We are established. We are verified house sharing platform. Like it's solid. It has a running history. It's already set up in there. And, you know, we have been lobbying the government. We put in a submission for the worsening housing crisis. We got accepted number 72. That's great. We're talking a lot to councils and regional areas to help them as well. There's a lot that we can do. The technology is right there. Come and have a conversation with me because we can actually help this problem right now.
Absolutely agree. And so on that very point, what's the best way for the rest of us, in addition to what you're doing, the room exchange, to actually make this happen now and turn this awesome opportunity into reality?
Well, lobby your government, lobby your local council, tell them about the UK rental scheme and let's bring this to Australia. Why shouldn't it be the case? Any tax that's attached to you actually sharing your spare room and solving a problem for the government should be abolished.
100%. So for those of us who are excited about this opportunity as I am, how and where can we find out more, Lebwena?
Well, more about us at theroomexchange.com. That's the letter XCHANGE.com. Please connect with me on LinkedIn, Lebwena Dordevic. I'd love to have a conversation with you there. If you've got some ideas on how we can work together to lobby the government or how we can work together to, you know, solve this problem. There are so many innovative ideas out there. It's not just house sharing. You know, there's so many different ways that we can deploy solutions right now. We just have to, as you said at the start of this conversation, we just got to think outside the square, you know, what is available to us right now. And with technology at the place that it's in right now, there are so many things, particularly in the prop tech space, that can help solve these issues. So just get active. Like don't fall into the doom and gloom of what's happening, because in these times, there's also great opportunity for change. And the level of change that we can actually encounter that will also at the same token strengthen communities. I think there is a massive potential there that we really haven't tapped into yet.
Absolutely. Taking action rather than talking about it is the absolute key. So I implore anyone who's listening to this to actually make a call, stir up your local polities, talk to the council, have a look at your own bedroom and then reach out to Lebwena to see how it's going to work for you. Look, Lebwena, always love having you on the show. I want to really thank you for these insights. Again, as I've said a couple of times already, it never ceases to amaze me that the best ideas are actually often staring us right in the face, yet they remain invisible because we fail to see them and take advantage of them, as they're always almost too easy to adopt. So again, I want to encourage everyone to start taking action and making noise about this, and reach out to Lebwena and her team at theroomexchange.com. And just to repeat that, it's the room X without the E, exchange.com. Or just click on the link in the show notes if you want to find out more. So thanks again for bringing this to our attention, Lebwena.
Thanks, Bushy. I really appreciate it.
Successful property investment is a game of finance. Do you have the right team and the right game plan? Realty Talk is brought to you by Know How Property. More than mortgage brokers, Bushy Martin and his team of investment architects set you up with a sustainable strategy structured to lower your costs, tax, risk, and stress while increasing your capacity for growth. Know How has helped over 1,900 homeowners and investors secure more than $800 million in property wealth. So get set to live more, work less, and live your legacy. Want to know how to invest in your freedom? Visit knowhowproperty.com.au. This is Realty Talk, powered by realty.com.au.
As an investor, you're bound to have heard the expression that property is a game of finance. And in fact, I've often said it myself. But is this really the case? And is there more to it? Well, today's guest, Josh Deckard and Tom Pettifer from Only Source Property, are actually transforming real estate property sourcing and search transactions across Australia by innovatively matching buyer's agents' clients' briefs with selling agents' pre-market and off-market properties, certainly believe there's more to property than just finance and the numbers. And they both join me now to complete the property investment picture. So welcome back to the Property Hub's Realty Talk Show, Josh and Tom.
Thanks, Bushy. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Bushy.
I love this topic. I had a good read of your blog on your website recently, and I thought it was well worth having a chat about it. So to set the scene, what do you believe are the limitations of making property decisions based purely on the numbers?
Well, look, by only focusing on the numbers, you're overlooking the non-quantifiable factors that are related to property. So, social perception, lifestyle, livability. You don't want to fall into the trap of perceiving an area to be what everyone else believes it to be. I mean, you know, like I guess what they say, don't follow the crowd, and the crowd's always late or they're usually wrong. So I think most successful people in this world have become successful by not following the herd. So, until you really go in and do your own DD and really assess the fundamentals, you're not going to know if the area has the prospects. And if you just fall into that trap of perceiving it to be what everyone else perceives it to be, you can miss an opportunity.
Totally agree. And you touched on perception there, Tom. So what part does perception play in property, do you believe, Goss?
Yeah, so I guess perception is everything, really. I mean, value is a perception. What one person perceives to be the value of a property compared to another. And it all comes down to the way you think about the property, the way you think about the location, the way, you know, you assess the property in your mind. And it just differs between two parties. I guess, you know, some things that you could consider are how do you perceive social housing to affect the property prices on a street? Some people would perceive it that it would reduce the value of the property, and other people would see it as an opportunity where you might be in a rapidly gentrifying area, and that your perception is that area, they will get developed. Eventually they will get developed. The area is rapidly gentrifying and you're getting in at a good price point, for example. So I guess fundamentally, everyone thinks differently, and your perception of what one thing is not necessarily the perception that someone else has on the same property in this instance.
Yeah, I agree. I think the awareness of local perception in particular is important in the property sphere, because on the numbers, something on a desktop can look fantastic, but if the locals think that a particular area or precinct is a dog, it's unlikely to perform from a growth perspective, particularly for that very reason, because the locals have already tagged that area as a bad area, regardless of what changes are likely to occur. So if at worst, it's going to be slow in its growth versus others. So it's a really important distinction that you draw. So when it comes to investing then, what are the bedrocks of buying decisions?
Yeah, so I guess in terms of bedrocks, it's prompt action is probably the one thing. It's not being held back and doing your fundamental and numerical analysis on a property. It's encompassing both parts. So you'll look at, you know, for example, commutability, looking at the social status of the area, looking at proximity to infrastructure and support. So there's a lot of, you know, like Tom said, there's a lot of non-quantifiable areas of property assessment that you need to take into consideration as one of the core decision making. You know, the yield and the property price, obviously that is the financial component. However, you know, you've got to take into account a broad spectrum of factors and then make a decision. And I guess the reality is 80% correct. Like your decision is 80% the way to a perfect property, you know, making the decision and making taking prompt action at that point, you're going to be sitting there for ages trying to find a unicorn, I guess. That's 100% perfect. So that prompt action in a good market is everything.
Yeah, well said. So how can our psychological biases cloud the judgment on property decisions then, guys?
I guess fundamentally the herd mentality is a key, is one of the ones that I can think of. Herd mentality, you're following what people are saying, you're following the group. And I'll give you an example. At the moment, people will say, have to buy in Perth, but a lot of people wouldn't be able to pinpoint exactly what the reason is to invest in Perth. So I guess you know, herd mentality, you would reduce the amount of due diligence and amount of oversight that you apply to a property. Yeah, I guess, you know, the psychological attributes, they lead to hesitation as well. So if you did identify that there's a large amount of social housing in an area, that would present some sort of hurdle that you would say, hey, well, I don't know whether I should do it now. And the reality is 50 other factors that should be taken into consideration in making a decision. That's only one point. So I guess we, you know, it's a holistic approach. You don't want to be caught in these biases where, you know, herd mentality or getting caught up on the first thing you read saying, oh, it's got 8% growth, then that must be a good area. So yes, we've, you know, you need to take a holistic approach and not be caught up in the nitty gritty of one or two attributes and go for it all.
It'll be like the analogy, the stock market trader that just does the technical analysis but ignores the fundamental. The two have to be in sync.
Yeah, it's using both sides of the brain to make a decision rather than relying on one. And there's some people who make decisions purely on the emotional side of the brain and the others who make it purely on the rational. It's a matter of combining those two to get the best outcome. So bringing this all together then, what do you believe is the true secret to property success in that in this context?
Adaptability. I bet we all don't invest the way we invest now probably wasn't the way when we first started, but we're not going to learn and grow. It's all a big growth journey. It's a long-term game. So I think you have to transact to learn. So I would definitely say, the ability to adapt as your circumstances change, not for the sake of it, but adaptability for the right reasons is key.
Yeah, well said. Any final comments there, Josh?
Yeah, I think Tom's nailed it. You learn through your mistakes, and unfortunately, there's money at stake. But you know, fundamentally, learn, understand what you're good at, and whether it's you have a renovation strategy, or whether you like development, or buy and hold, or you know, trying to buy a unicorn as such, you might be good at doing one thing and stick to that and adapt as necessary based on market conditions and obviously your financial capacity and the way you identify properties in the market. That will change. I guess a perfect example is people will start with residential property, they transition to commercial, and then they say, hey, I want to do some developing. And you know, obviously the financial capacity is one of the things that is considerably considerable in that sort of instance. However, you really got to, look at it. It's your brain opens up over time, and the way you do things and how smart and how much street smarts you have in property, that adapts. And if you embrace that, then you can do well.
Yeah, well said. Well, look, I really want to thank you for these quite timely insights, gentlemen, which certainly reinforces that successful property investment is both a science and an art that delicately balances the importance of the mind and emotion from behavioral economics with the modern money. So if anyone would like to learn more, or if you're a buyer's agent or a selling agent wanting to eliminate the pain and stress of sourcing quality properties, jump on the link to onlysourceproperty.com that you're going to find in the show notes. So thanks again for your generous time on the show today, Josh and Tom.
Thanks very much, Bushy. Thanks for
having me. Pleasure, Bushy.
Hi, just before we go back to the show, I want to spend a few seconds and tell you about a book that was sent to me that's now become my go-to reference when I'm looking for inspiration about property investment. You know, sometimes it's not about knowing all the answers. It's certainly more important to know what questions to ask. This book by Rasti is called The Property Wealth Blueprint. And it's one that you don't read just once and then put it away. It stays out as a reference. It's a book that you go back to time and time again, as I do, because it's packed with personal experience and with great examples of how to get property investment right. It's very frank. It's to the point. And as you can see here, I've needed to bookmark several points. And I can tell you that it's a constant companion on my desk here. The remarkable thing is that it's absolutely free on Rasti's website, getrare.com.au. Get Rare. It's a gateway to a richer life. The website there for you again, getrare.com.au. So get this book, get it for yourself.
Realty Talk exclusive to The Property Hub.
Now, housing accessibility continues to be the biggest hurdle preventing hardworking Aussies from getting onto the home ownership ladder, because saving for the required deposit and on costs is like chasing a train that's already left the station, as home values in most parts of the country continue to rise. And this is echoed in a more than 25% drop in home ownership rates since the early 1980s amongst those aged between 25 and 34. And saving up the 20% deposit to avoid costly lender's mortgage insurance on a typical average cost home now takes 14 years or more based on average incomes. So to help overcome this major bottleneck and help aspiring home buyers to secure a bank loan with zero deposit, CBA-backed industry disruptors Own Home have recently launched their Australian First Deposit Boost Loan. And co-founder James Bauer joins us again to reveal the details. So welcome back to the Property Hub's Realty Talk, James.
Great to be here, Bushy. Thanks for having me.
I love the way you guys are constantly looking at the market and looking at different ways and avenues to try and help people get onto the property ladder. And this is a great addition to the exercise. So tell us a bit more about what the Own Home Deposit Boost Loan is and how it works.
So the Own Home Deposit Boost Loan is really focused on removing the largest barrier to home ownership that we see currently facing Australians, and that's the upfront costs. Of course, as many, you know, serviceability and affordability is also a challenge, but we're really focused on accessibility in the form of removing those upfront cost barriers. And so the problem that we're here fundamentally to do our best to solve is that home ownership in Australia is at risk of becoming hereditary. I mean, Bushy, you just mentioned those stats around falling rates of home ownership amongst my generation, and it's certainly not by virtue of sort of changing preferences and desire to have the security of home ownership. So today, up to 2/3 of new home buyers utilize the bank of mum and dad to purchase their property. And that's not the fault of those that rely on it. It's certainly becoming a borderline necessity to access the security of home ownership. And we're really here to support with our deposit boost loan those that don't have access to that intergenerational wealth. And so we know that right around the country, there are hundreds of thousands of families that are more than capable of making the repayments of a mortgage or affording a mortgage, but don't have the hundreds of thousands upfront that are typically required to bridge that deposit gap. And so that's where we step in. We fund up to the full 20% deposit, allowing our customers or brokers' clients to access a standard 80% LVR mortgage from one of our growing list of partner lenders, and also avoid costly lenders' mortgage insurance. And so most importantly, we're really focused on enabling people to buy their home today rather than sort of years in the future that they'll continue to spend sort of renting and typically paying off someone else's mortgage.
Yeah, well, it's a great hole that you've identified and a really awesome way to plug that gap. So in the context of all of that then, James, who's best suited for the Own Home Deposit Boost Loan as well as who isn't? And yeah, can you talk us through some of the eligibility requirements as well?
Of course. So the individuals or families that we most often support are those who are doing everything right. They've got great credit histories. They're earning high incomes or have great incomes. They've got great credit scores. They don't have the full 20% deposit, but they're otherwise in a position to service a mortgage as well as the Own Home loan. So, you know, as I said, people that are financially responsible, but are feeling sort of left behind by the Australian housing market. And so typically those people are individuals or families who, as I said, don't have access to the bank of mum and dad. Maybe they don't have parents that have enjoyed the great Australian property boom. And overwhelmingly, you know, in a country where 30% of Australians were born overseas, there are so many who, you know, have parents who are very unlikely to have enjoyed the great Australian property boom, which is more often than not the source of that sort of intergenerational wealth transfer for folks to bridge that deposit gap. And so the common thread is that, you know, these families would all be dream customers of lenders if they had the deposit funds, because they're more than capable of affording a home loan.
Yeah, perfect. So if you're getting specific around some of those eligibility requirements, can you sort of break those down for us?
Yeah. So typically, in terms of an income threshold, if you're above the first home owner or the first home buyer guarantee program threshold for income, then that's becoming an individual or a family that we can support. And those cutoffs are sort of $125,000 for individuals and $200,000 for couples or families. And so that starts to put you, or that puts you into a territory where we're going to be likely able to support you. And it also means that you're going to have serviceability for a property profile that we're going to be best placed to support you purchasing, because we're today able to support families looking in metro and sort of regional centres. So if we're in New South Wales, think of sort of Newcastle down to Wollongong and Greater Sydney. And so that's from a sort of property profile and geographic area point of view. And today we're able to serve families on sort of the east coast of Australia, Perth, South Australia, but not yet in Tasmania or the Northern Territory.
Yeah, awesome. So to put some context around the relative costings, what are the upfront costs and how do they compare with other options that people might want to look at?
Yeah, so the upfront costs of own home are really straightforward. It's 1% to 2% plus GST of the purchase price. So it's 1% where you contribute a 10% or more deposit towards that home purchase. And it's 2% where you contribute less than a 10% deposit. So it's typically less than half the cost of lender's mortgage insurance. And when I say, in fact, more often than not, you can't access lender's mortgage insurance loans above a 95% LVR typically. So to put that in perspective, you know, those that are looking to buy a medium priced home in Sydney are going to need to save, you know, typically over $270,000 for a 20% deposit and stamp duty, which would, you know, as you said, Bushy, often take sort of well over a decade, or 14 years was the figure that you mentioned.
Yep.
With a deposit boost loan, so aspiring homeowners are going to need a fraction of that for that medium priced home in Sydney. So $70,000, including stamp duty. And so really slashing the time that it would take to get into to the security of homeownership by hopefully a decade.
Yeah, it's a significant saving. And with good quality properties and areas continue to grow in value, then they're actually getting on the wealth train as far as that goes as well. So love that. Now, I know you've got a deposit boost loan starter fee that's incorporated in what you've just mentioned. What's included in that, please, James?
So that starter fee covers a personal own home buyer's agent. So our buyer's agent service is really what our customers shout about from the rooftops if you read our online reviews. So a licensed buyer's agent to guide customers through the home purchase journey from property hunting to settlement and move-in. So the expert team handle all real estate agent communications, including negotiations and auction bidding. Conveyancing fees are included in that starter fee. So usually homeowners or aspiring homeowners have to pay additional costs for those, but not at own home. So we work with a team of conveyancers and solicitors to make sure that paperwork is done right and fast, as well as so building and pest or strata reports are also covered by that for any properties that you diligence as part of that home purchase journey. And so while we hope that, you know, every property report comes back with a clean bill of health, we've certainly, or the team has certainly seen it all before. And so we're there to advise on next steps if there's any red flags that come out of those reports. And of course, families have a personalized digital home finder tool. So we're in the weeds via that with our clients to help them suss out properties that could genuinely work for them.
I love the way you're taking a lot of the pain, stress, and time away from the process, as well as bolstering particularly someone who's buying a property for the first time, who knows enough to be dangerous often in that context, to have an experienced buyer's agent by their side who's de-risking the whole process, coordinating the inputs, and really giving their time back to focus on the enjoyable part of the home buying journey. That's an awesome advantage they get by using own home to help them do that. So I love that. Now, are there any limitations, James, on homes that can be purchased using the own home deposit boost loan?
Yeah. So one important consideration is what's the purpose of the loan or the home? So today we can support those that are looking to own or occupy their property. So they're looking for a home to live in. And we're able to support families in metro areas or regional centres of New South Wales, Victoria, Western Australia, and South Australia. We're today only able to support those that are looking for existing dwellings or homes that have, and by that I mean have occupation certificates. So move-in ready homes if they are new builds. So unfortunately, that means that we're not able to support house and land packages today. And I know that that's a really important focus for a lot of first-home buyers. So watch this space. But that does come with its own sort of distinct set of risks.
It's a very different area, and given the challenges that the construction industry continues to work through, then it's probably a good place to sit out of in the current climate. Now, you touched on risks there, James. Are there any risks from a home buyer's perspective associated with a deposit boost loan that they need to know about?
Yeah, so I think there are, you know, broadly speaking, inherent risks when purchasing a home with credit. It's a massive investment. The property market can be volatile. We've just lived through a period of, you know, relative volatility in the context of the Australian property market. But we are there to try and mitigate those risks as much as possible. And part of the magic, as you mentioned, of how we're able to support lending up to 100% of the home value is that we are incredibly rigorous when it comes to assessment. And that's both for the individuals or families that are borrowing from own home, but it's also being incredibly rigorous in the diligence of the properties or the homes that they're buying. So for the person, for the people, you know, normal lending looks at, do you have a 20% deposit? And then more often than not, their lenders are comfortable, even if that is mostly in the form of a gift from, say, their parents.
Yeah.
In contrast, we are there to understand 12 months of banking transaction data to make a real-world assessment of someone's ability to make repayments on that loan obligation for both the first mortgage as well as their loan with own home. And so the second aspect of that risk mitigation is really on the house or home itself. So the most significant risk for customers and also for own home is that a suburb record is set where it shouldn't be, and that people spend their money on a home that's not a good investment. And so we're really hyper focused on ensuring that customers buy an amazing property at a really great entry price. And we see our buyer's agent service as really aligned with, you know, honestly, own home's interests as a lender to that family, as well as the client's interest that we're there to support.
Yeah, I love that. Having your own buyer's agent in your back pocket, keeping an eye on things and orchestrating things on your behalf is an absolute bonus that the average person buying a home doesn't even get near to. So some clear advantages there. This is really interesting. James, what's the best way for anyone interested to find out more?
The best way for anyone to find out more is, one, speak to their broker. That's a really great avenue, and I think they're really well placed to help you think through what are all the options that are available to me, whether that's parental guarantor, whether that's high LVR LMI supported loans, or whether that's own home. But of course, you can also find out more directly about own home via our website at ownhome.com. And there, you're able to read customer stories, compare upfront costs, and ultimately check your eligibility for own home.
Yeah, I love it, James. I know how property finance team's getting right behind what you're doing with this deposit boost loan. So for those who just want to have a chat to some of our finance architects, feel free to reach out and have a chat. But I really want to thank you for bringing this quite groundbreaking initiative to the marketplace and to our attention, James. And I just want to reinforce, I want to suggest that anyone who'd like to learn more just jumps on the website at ownhome.com. And you can do that just by clicking the link in the show notes. So we appreciate your very generous time on talking about this today, James.
Thanks, Bushy.
Here's how Realty's discovery search works. Now, think of AI as an assistant on your real estate journey. How AI works is by using algorithms and data, the words that you use to describe the type of property you want. By entering what you want, the AI learns and makes predictions or decisions, and then shows you the results. So rather than searching by suburb and then property type and land size and so on, simply type in or say what you want. The more you use Realty's AI discovery search, the more accurate it becomes.
Unlock bonus content now as a premium subscriber.
Are you still insured? And how much have you seen the cost of your insurance policies increase in recent times? One of the areas that property buyers and investors need to pay much more heed of as the escalating risk of climate change and its effects on extreme weather events continue to escalate is getting good specialised insurance cover. Sadly, many standard insurance policies offered by general off-the-shelf insurance companies or rebranded insurance products that are offered cheaply via supermarkets, etc., may look cheap, but in reality, they're not worth the paper they're written on. And you only find this out when you go to make a claim. Remember the old adage that if it's too good to be true, then it probably is. And what appears to be cheap insurance may actually turn out to be very expensive when your claim's rejected or takes many months or even years to settle. So believe me, if you're a long-term buy and hold investor or a long-term home owner occupier, it's not a matter of if you'll need to make an insurance claim, but it's just a matter of when. And it's the when that reveals just how good, bad, or ugly your insurance policy is. As when we owned and ran a property management business for many years, we got to see firsthand the claims processes of most insurers. And many of the cheap off-the-shelf policies from general insurers are looking for a reason to say no and to not pay out when it comes to making a claim, and it can often take many months or even years before your claim eventually gets settled. So in the meantime, you're left holding the cost. Now, this is not insurance advice, and it's only general information, and it's definitely not a recommendation, as we're not licensed to advise on insurance. We just want you to make sure you consider spending just the few extra dollars a year required to get specialist building, contents, and landlord insurance from a recognized provider, or speak to a savvy insurance broker to assist you with this. Now, following on from this, with climate change risk escalating, you need to be very careful about where you buy a property, because even the specialized insurance companies are now pulling back from offering or renewing insurance in climate change areas that are increasingly being affected by extreme weather events in terms of the escalating frequency and severity of these issues. For example, as of a few weeks ago, some property insurance specialists are no longer offering building insurance in high-risk flood-prone areas, as the buildings are no longer considered insurable. Given a series of floods in recent years, the difficulty in securing cover for properties in flood-prone areas is well known, and the worsening extreme weather events and resultant impacts on claims and costs have finally meant that a growing number of insurance companies can no longer offer ongoing building cover to properties in high-risk flood-prone areas. And this is not just for new property buyers, as existing property owners with existing policies will no longer be able to renew them. Property owners in these high-risk areas can still take out landlord and contents policies, but not building policies, which is a big issue. And some insurers are also putting embargoes on cyclone-prone areas. Over the next 6 months, we've been made aware that a growing number of insurance companies are unable to offer cover to new property purchasers and new policyholders in cyclone-prone areas. Now, it's anticipated and hoped that this is just a short-term change and that they will once again be able to offer cover in these areas in due course, but time and climate conditions are likely to dictate this. Existing policyholders in these areas can still renew their usual cover and limits, but potential new property purchasers will be at the mercy of nature. The message: be careful where you invest and buy property from here on through. So we suggest that you can contact your insurer to confirm exactly what you are and aren't covered for. Make sure you consider a property insurance specialist to make sure you've got good insurance cover and at the adequate level, and take much more care of where you buy property in the future to ensure you can actually be insured. And if you want to discuss this more and share your thoughts on this growing area of risk, join Eddie the Frenchman on the Property Hub Collective Facebook community by clicking the link in the show notes to facebook.com/groups/The Property Hub Collective. Thanks, and that's more food for thought.
And that brings us to the end of this week's show. A big thanks to Ledwina, Tom, and James for their contributions. And make sure you don't miss a single episode of Realty Talk or Bushy's Get Invested podcast delivered to you each week by subscribing to The Property Hub now on your favorite podcast player or wherever you're listening to or watching this show. Also, join the conversation anytime on Facebook at The Property Hub Collective. Thanks to our supporters and content partners, realty.com.au, BMT, Tax Depreciation, Know How Property Finance, Get Rare Property and Apiro Marketing. I'm Kevin Turner, and on behalf of Bushy and the Property Hub team, we look forward to seeing you again next week.